Project Veritas have been exposing big tech and big pharma for years with the use of hidden cameras and actors posing as employees. The main man for all this time has been James O'Keefe. Now, I confess, I thought Project Veritas was James O'Keefe. But now, James has been thrown out on gardening leave by Project Veritas. It seems that the power within the organisation lays elsewhere. George Webb is an American journalist that broke the story of O'Keefe's removal. George, thanks for joining us. Just what is going on at the moment with Project Veritas?
Well, James, O'Keefe, like you said, is the front man for Project Veritas. He resigned yesterday. I'm not sure I broke that story, but I broke a story which gave him the critical white papers that Jordan Walker, the guy who the story was about, who the whistleblower or the victim of the camera was about. And that's the piece that I added to it. I'm here in Florida because one of the board members is in a polo club not too far from me, the Wellington Polo Club. It's a famous English name. And he also is the heir of a yacht company. So these are the people that engineered a coup on James O'Keefe, a yacht guy. Who also plays polo on the weekends here in Florida.
See, I don't want to be judgmental, George, but I'm going to be. The idea of someone that is a yacht guy at a polo club, that doesn't tend to fit with the kind of people that would be breaking stories, bringing down big pharma and big corporations.
Right. Well, he's only been with the company 4 months, and where they got into a problem was this meteoric story that they did about Pfizer and this Jordan Walker with this hidden camera. And they had 10 times more views on social media than they'd had ever before. So the success kind of rushed to their brain, the, you know, adrenaline rush. And then there seemed to be a scramble for power and editorial control. And this guy named Hinckley, Barry Hinckley, the yacht family, very famous yacht family here in the United States, Newport, Rhode Island, was brought in 4 months ago to sort of steer the boat. Is sort of, I'm not sure he did a very good job. But James got into a fight with him and fired him. And the board had an emergency meeting, and then they reestablished this yacht guy. So James walked out yesterday, cleaned out his stuff out of his drawer, and then took off. So he's no longer at Project Veritas, and they've been hemorrhaging. Project Veritas has been hemorrhaging followers ever since.
So they break this huge story against Pfizer. It was an incredible story. I remember watching it, secret footage where they show this guy talking about the fact that they were engineering viruses to basically then create vaccines for, which is an unbelievable exposure. I mean, that's absolutely enormous. And then suddenly they bring in this guy from wealth, and all of a sudden the main guy, James O'Keefe, is out. It feels like those things are connected.
Yeah, I think they are. There may be more to the story that I've added that may give you a little bit of additional insight and background. And it's the piece that links this guy, Jordan Walker, the subject of James O'Keefe's target interview, with the Boston Consulting Group, all the way to Klaus Schwab, links all the way to the CEO of the Boston Consulting Group, and a guy who really has been a protege of Klaus Schwab for some time, this Christoph Schweitzer. So that's the part that I don't think the yacht guy wanted to come out. They wanted it just to be this low-level director saying directed evolution, this phrase directed evolution and Pfizer. That was all they wanted to come out. They put an LED truck with huge LED panels with Jordan Walker's picture and the hashtag directed evolution. And then when James was on the phone with me and in front of 5,000 people taking in the connections that went up to the kingpin rather than the low level kind of Uber driver of the story, that's when he got in trouble. And it leads directly to Klaus Schwab's door.
That's incredible. So this Walker guy, what's his position now? I mean, as Schwab and the like kind of distance themselves from him?
Yeah, well, I don't know if he ever was more than a contractor for Boston Consulting Group. It's a major consulting organization that was responsible for the lockdowns during Operation Warp Speed. So in England, the directors in England were getting 6,000 pounds a day while they were writing tag and trace software so people in England could be traced. They're equally powerful here in the United States, all over France, Macron's best partners. So they're very powerful politically on the government side. But Walker was focused on the bio pharma. And his paper, which he wrote with three other very high-level people at Boston Consulting Group, are the ones that focused in on remdesivir and bringing these therapeutics, remdesivir, back after two failed trials. So he was really at his background. He had been kind of a failing intern. He failed out of his first year at Tufts. And then he put some things on his resume about Massachusetts General that weren't true. He said he had 10 years experience at Pfizer, which wasn't true. Maybe he had a year. So there's a lot of problems with Jordan Walker's background. But the message he was delivering was, hey, we need to bring back remdesivir. We need to do these mRNA vaccines. And that is the story.
See, remdesivir is responsible for the death of so many people. I mean, so many people. I had conversations because they use the same drug here. I remember as soon as I'd kind of got some information that I was being told, connecting remdesivir to kidney failure, and that actually a lot of these so-called COVID deaths were actually dying of kidney failure as a result of remdesivir. And I spoke to a couple of people who had lost a loved one, and they weren't coming at me, but they were kind of, I guess they kind of were a bit in the sense of, you know, but what does this, you know, what you're saying about COVID and stuff? Yeah, I've lost a loved one. And so I asked the question, I said, were they on remdesivir and did they have kidney failure on their death certificate? And I'll find out. And they came back with their tail between their legs. And that was the case a lot. So the fact that he's prominent in pushing that is really important because that killed a lot of people.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is Jordan Walker only would have had 1 or 2 years at Pfizer and didn't have any experience in pharmacology. So they're using him to take the rap for a much higher level decision. Remdesivir was a failed product from two different trials, didn't even come close to coming to fruition ever clinically. So bringing that out of nowhere and resurrecting it. And the only reason you would do that is because remdesivir creates mutants. It creates a situation that you can't put the fire out. It's sort of like a grease fire in your kitchen and you put the water on it, it just gets worse. And if it doesn't kill you or both, we had a lot of people here that we've interviewed weren't even told that they were being put on remdesivir. I've interviewed a guy in Birmingham, Alabama, who had that situation. We interviewed another girl here in Boston who her mother didn't even know she was on remdesivir. And before she was separated from her child, then she was put on the ventilator and then she was dead 8 days later. So this is a killer and they want to kind of soft shoe this off to Pfizer. And I think Pfizer should pay for whatever sins they did, but I don't want to see remdesivir let off the hook either. Pfizer makes remdesivir also in McPherson, Kansas. So indirectly, Pfizer is responsible as well.
So what, moving back to Project Veritas, what do you think the future holds for them now? Because I'm sure I'm not the only person that thought that James O'Keefe was Project Veritas.
Well, they had a series of, they do a lot with volunteers. They actually have 65 employees. They have a $20 million annual budget. I'm sure, you know, Gareth, if you had $20 million,
I would love that. I would like, we could do a lot more work with that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of money. And so you would think that they had a lot more people than they do, but they don't. So James O'Keefe is sort of the superstar who breaks all the stories, but there's a lot of people behind the scenes doing the hidden camera and then bringing it to James. And this is what I think happened is they did the filming of the Pfizer guy and they were setting this up and compartmentalizing this and just making sure this is Pfizer, but don't go to Boston Consulting Group. I talked to one of the other coup conspirators in front of 11,000 people on a Twitter space named Nario Nawfal, N-A-W-F-A-L. And he didn't want anything to do, this Matt Tierman did not want anything to do with that Boston Consulting Group paper with Jordan Walker. You would think as a reporter, that would be the first thing you would, you know, sink your teeth into. So James O'Keefe, on the other hand, 2 days later, was all over it. And I think his only crime here was journalism.
I wonder what he'll do now. Do you think he will go solo and carry on doing this? Because it's interesting you say that. Like, we had a similar situation here where we had the story in the UK of midazolam, which I know they were using in the States as well, but it broke a journalist, Jackie Devoy, and a couple of other people, a couple of lawyers that were working with care homes had basically got wind of this midazolam story. And Jackie went to several different outlets. One major newspaper, huge newspaper in the UK, said they wanted the story, but only if someone broke it first. And I was thinking, that's insane. Surely it's the other way around. You want the exclusive. And a friend of mine who is good friends with people within a major television network at the UK, he said the same thing, that they would break the midazolam story and they were very interested in it, but they needed someone else to break it. Now, we broke it here at Iconic, but I don't think we're big enough in their eyes to have broken it enough for them to then run with it, which is extraordinary, isn't it? Because like you say, it's journalism.
Yeah, you see a dog on a bone. I mean, that's how I am when I see the red meat. I go for it. James has filed, I believe, a LLC filing in Delaware, which most corporations are filed here in the United States, with a company called Transparency. The slogan for Project Veritas is radical transparency. So I know he's liked that for a long time. It's been their slogan for a long time. So maybe his new venture will be radical transparency or just called transparency. But I think he's going to take some of the people we know and bring them over from Project Veritas to this new venture. And I think it's going to be coming out pretty quick for the 2024 presidential campaign.
Well, I sincerely hope so, because that kind of genuine journalism is much needed from as many sources as possible. George, thanks so much for joining us, mate. And it would be great, as always, to have you on another time and talk about what you're up to. Because when I look at your Twitter, you're everywhere and all over the place. And it's great to keep up with you.
All right. Thanks, Gareth. It's always great to be back here.
That's all for this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We are now closing in on our 100th episode. And so I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of you for supporting what we're trying to do. Iconic only exists because of your support, and that fact isn't taken for granted. A massive thanks, too, to all of our guests over this nearly two-year period. They've put their head above the parapet to come on the show and speak to us, often about sensitive topics. Sensitive in the sense that it's something that challenges the pre-agreed narrative, but also personally sensitive. It takes courage to sit in front of a camera and share your personal stories with a relative stranger and, of course, all of our viewers. Things are slightly different now, of course, as events have shown us to have been correct on many subjects we were labelled crazy for questioning. But in the early days, people were taking a risk talking to an Ike. We had many guests, including doctors and sitting members of parliament, booked to come on the show, who pulled out when they realised they would be tarred by association. The Ikes are dangerous, don't you know? Now is a critical time because as the tide is turning post-plandemic, people have allowed themselves to become complacent, which I totally understand. We're all crisis fatigued, and that, of course, is by design. From one manufactured fear to the next takes its toll on all of us, but we need to remain on alert, as we did during the Rona era, ready to jump up and push back against the next mandate, the next lockdown, or the expansion of the rollout to include the kids, all these different things. Because it's no coincidence that those nations that were pushed further into tyranny during that period were the ones with the least pushback from the populace. Compliant sheep will always be the first to the slaughterhouse. Let's not forget that. But those who say no and stand their ground against whatever it is that's thrown at them, they are the ones that will be left victorious. Fortune favours the brave. It always has. Good night.